You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Troy McClain and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Hey, everybody, this is Troy McClain and Tommy Ahlquist back with another exciting episode with a very, very special guest, Mr. Andrew Probst. Andrew Probst and me and Tommy are going to be talking about going from land to loving our land. I just made that up. It was
I'm in the wrong place.
Hey, listen, some days you got it, some days you don't. To all of our podcast listeners, sometimes when he's off the cuff, it works, and sometimes it doesn't. So
I'm going to redo it.
No, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, there is so much. Hold on, I'm just going to get the over.
So start. You're into everything, but there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about.
Okay,
but give us just a little bit of your bio. Growing up here, and just talk to us a little bit about you and your businesses, and then we'll blaze into some questions.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's some to talk about. You guys are going to have to push me a little bit, but first of all, thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
This is awesome. You guys are great. I was born here in Boise. Spent the first 12 years of my life here. Was a little entrepreneur, just, you know, getting by, trying to make money. My dad was an appliance repair technician. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. So we, you know, kind of came from humble beginnings. When I was 12, we moved to Oregon, a little town called Lebanon, Oregon. It's the grass seed capital of the world. So threw a lot of bags of grass seed, grew up there. Once I, you know, got to the ripe old age of 18, I prepared to go on a mission for my church, went on a mission, came back, went to school in Portland, and then moved back to Idaho in 2008 because my wife's from here, you know, happy wife, happy life. So lost that battle, but I moved back here.
The wife battle or where you live battle?
Yeah.
Where we live battle.
Okay, good, yeah, good. Sure, sure. Good. I want to make sure we clarify that.
But this is great. So moved back to Boise. Never.
Happy wife.
Happy life.
Happy life.
Yeah.
So lots of, in fact, my parents moved back here, so it's great. So we have a lot of family here, but it's a great place.
And tell us about your businesses, because you got a few.
Yeah. I mean, the main business is Home River Group. It's a national third-party residential property management. We're trying to roll up. So you think real estate, there's a lot of companies, a lot of, you know, verticals that have rolled up, real estate, you know, mortgage, property management there's no national player.
Yeah.
And we're trying to be the first. So
it's great.
In 2016, I took my company, which used to be called Park Place Property Management. We manage about 5,000 doors here in Boise, and we merged it.
It's legit.
We merged it with, two other companies, one in Indy and one in Florida. And then since then, we've done about 16 acquisitions of other property management companies. We're trying to do more of that and, you know, build a national property management brand. So it's been pretty exciting.
I mean, where'd you serve mission?
Do we want to jump right there? Because this is not like
your podcast.
This is not, you probably don't know the story.
I don't know the story. By the way, you can conversate about anything.
Oh,
just
yeah,
so no, you know.
Let's jump right there. So what you're probably most famous for. So there is a movie. There's a movie called the Saratov Approach. And for anyone that is LDS or Mormon out there, they've seen this movie. There were LDS missionaries who were kidnapped. And and this guy was one of them. And there's a movie about this. And I know you had something to do with the movie. The movie is phenomenal, by the way.
Thank you.
It's like, called the Saratov?
Oh, you gotta go watch it tonight. It's like, I can't wait to talk to you just about the movie.
Sure.
I had no clue. No, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about
We were going to talk about bowling the whole time.
We're going to talk about bowling.
We'll talk about bowling.
We're going to get to bowling. We're going to get to bowling.
I love bowling. No, I'm horrible.
Just no more taglines.
No taglines. Sometimes. But Saratov, where did you serve your mission?
So Russia. Saratov, Russia. Yeah. If you're from the United States, Saratov.
Okay.
And it's Saratov, Russia. Saratov. So I served in Saratov. Well, I was there. I was on my mission for 13 months in Russia. So 2 months in the missionary training center, learned how to speak Russian. Actually, I didn't learn how to speak Russian.
That sounded pretty good.
Yeah. When you sounded good. Yeah. You had a good accent.
Went great. Yeah.
You go there, then you learn the language. I still struggled, you know.
Yeah.
But then I got to my mission, served 13 months, and then I had a little bit of an incident. Plasima. With some.
So tell us, I mean, seriously, because we got, this is a big deal. This was, and it was a very popular movie, and you can tell us how it did, but it was a very good movie. It was gripping. Tell us what happened. And then I'd like to hear, cause I know you had something to do with producing the movie.
Sure.
And then how accurate it was. Give us a little of the story.
So it was the story of how we actually got kidnapped. So my, as you know, probably when you're a Mormon missionary, you have a companion. You always got the other guy, the name tags, right?
Right.
You're going around, you're knocking on doors. So one day in, I think it was late February, somebody was waiting outside of church. So it was Sunday, we come out, we had a guy named Carl. We push his wheelchair over to the train and take him home. There was a guy out there who said, "Hey, I know somebody from the other part of the city who's a member of your church. Love the guy. I want to know more about your church. Can you come over and tell us about it?" And we're like, "Whoa, this is awesome. This is like, this has never happened." First of all, we were pretty excited. We're like, "This guy's going to be great. You know, we're going to go talk to him and convert him to the church."
He's a shoe-in.
Yeah. Shoe-in. This is perfect. So that was on Sunday, and we had the appointment for Wednesday. So Wednesday, you know, happy go lucky, just run into the appointment and we're going to do some awesome stuff. Knock on the door. He lets us in. It's really noisy. It's really noisy in his apartment. We're trying to figure out what's going on in Russia because the streets are either snowy or muddy all the time. Nobody wears their shoes inside. So I reach down to untie my shoes, right in the back of the head. Guy hits me with a bat. I let out like the largest, girliest scream of all time.
No way.
I'm falling down because I'm getting hit. I'm seeing that my companion is just getting wailed on by this guy that we called Nikolai. He's getting beat. I'm falling to the ground. I hit the ground. I start getting up and start moving towards the door. Whack. Just get whacked again. So I'm like, I don't like that. It hurts. So I put my hands on my head to protect my head. Then he hits me in the hand with the bat. That hurts too, you know? And so I'm just trying to fight to get to the door. And finally, I roll over, look up, and there's this big Russian guy with a, you know, a ski mask on. He runs a slide on his 9mm and puts it in my face and says, "Don't bleep and move," you know, Paruski in Russian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't speak English. You know, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
It got pretty real. Oof. It got pretty real. Real fast. You know, we're just, you know, talk about going from a high to a low pretty quick. They, you know, tie our hands behind our back, slide us into the kitchen, tie our legs to our hands, and leave us on the kitchen floor for about 3 hours until it gets dark. Once it got dark, they took us down into a car and drove us, who knows, 40 minutes outside the city into a little thing called a dacha, which is like a small farmhouse. And then they tied us up to the radiator heater. And
talk to us a little bit about what's going through your mind during this, because I mean, this has got to be,
it's gripping.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. No, I mean, lots of stuff. I mean, stuff as simple as I could vividly remember my mom. Like I was, you know, on the couch watching a show and my mom said, "Andy, I need you to take out the garbage." And I was like, "Oh, not right now, mom," you know? And like, that would come to my head, like crystal clear. Like, why didn't I take out? You know, just like little thoughts like that, just rattling around in my head, like, you know, kind of the crystal clear regrets, because I'm thinking I'm done. And these are the things that I wish I would have done.
Wow. And at this point, you have no agenda. They've declared no agenda.
No
right?
agenda. I had no idea. Literally, I was talking to Tuttle. He was laying right next to me, looking at me. And I'm like, I was the new missionary to that area. He was the district leader and I was getting trained to be the district leader. And I looked at him and said, "What did you do? Like, you had to do something, because these guys aren't just, you know, hitting me for fun. They're passionate. They're mad. Yeah. There's something going on. Like, who did you make mad?
Right.
What did you do?" And he's like, "I'm racking my brain. Props. I don't know."
Were the two of you able to communicate during this whole thing, or did they stop communication between the two of you?
Yeah. So we were on the ground in the kitchen for about 10 minutes before they came in and gagged us. And that's when they tied our feet to our, so we were hogtied. So our feet were tied to the handcuffs. And while I was laying there, you know, like the most excruciating pain I've ever been in for the most long, the longest period of time was those handcuffs on really tight.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then you're pulling on them with your feet tied around these, these ropes. And so I'm begging them to kind of loosen the cuffs and they're like, you know, be quiet. But before that, I mean, we were so desperate. We were on the, like, I think it was the third floor. There's maybe 3 feet of snow outside. We're thinking, like, let's go out the kitchen window. You just get, you know, you get in that flight or fight mode, and you're not thinking with your brain. You're thinking with the frontal part of your brain. It's crazy.
So what was the objective? What, they kidnap you, they take you. Heavenly Father sends you to serve a mission.
Correct.
Heavenly Father decides that there's something for you to learn, which is...
I love it when Troy, who's not LDS or Mormon, goes all Heavenly Father on us.
I can throw it out there, bro. And I got CTR. Maybe I bring it.
CTR.
But I really, I got it, baby. Sorry. I popcorn on the apricot tree. I'm with you guys. I know how to do that.
You know the hand signals?
I do. I got it. I'm with you.
I mean, this is must-see TV.
I'm ready to get dipped, man. Let's get it done.
Do it.
Somebody's got their water here. So go back to... I'm fascinated, though, with this. Did you ever find out why they're kidnapping
you? Of course. I mean, once they got us in the car, they rolled us out to who knows where. We couldn't see. We're blindfolded the whole time. We're laying out each other in the back of this little Lada, the Russian-made car.
Yeah.
We get out there. They wrap us in plastic, and then they take pictures of us. They take our name badges, right. Take our passport. You always have to have your passport on it. So took that, and then guy leaves. The big guy that beat me, like Tuttle, my companion, he's getting beaten on by this like little Russian dude. I've got this monster.
The big guy.
You got Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Do you remember the old what is it? The fight?
Drago.
Yeah.
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 Rocky.
Yeah. Yeah. This is this guy, but a little chubby, right? So he's beating on me, whatever. He leaves. He goes, types up a proof of life ransom note.
Yeah.
Comes back, and then he reads us a ransom note, and that's where we get very clear, like what's going on, which is basically saying, hey, you got to pay these, pay us, or we're going to exterminate the Americans, sort of thing.
Come on.
So they send it to the church. They that night, this guy, we called him Peter. Mm-hmm. He goes to the area president of the church, or I think they called him a district president back then, and puts it on his door. And then the guy wakes up the next morning, goes to work. There's a packet on the door. Pulls it out, looks at it. I know the guy, Sergei Lukin. I know the guy. He looks at it and he's like, oh my gosh. So he calls the church. The next thing the State Department's coming out, church officials, security officers, and it becomes an international incident. President Clinton got involved. Gordon Smith, our senator at the time in Oregon, who was LDS, got hyper involved in the situation. So, and then we were held for 5 days.
Props, man.
Props.
That is a phenomenal story.
Yeah. It was crazy. A lot of stuff. A lot of stuff happened.
The movie is really, really good. I thought. So how accurate is the movie?
Yeah.
And I know you talked to us about your involvement with the movie because it's been a while now, but it's gripping. I think I've watched it twice. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy because a lot of LDS families, they don't watch TV on Sunday. Their parents say, you can't watch TV, but you can watch church-related movies. So I'll meet kids, they'll say...
Literally, I've watched your movie over and over again.
I like the kids. I've seen it 100 times. Literally, I'm like, no, you haven't.
This is not something to laugh about. Yeah,
Tommy. I'm so sorry.
No,
I mean I've seen it start to finish twice. I'm talking to kids like we watch it every Sunday.
Yeah,
it's just I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's go-to.
It's pretty accurate.
Oh yeah, I mean.
And so you were involved, right?
Yeah, a little bit. So the movie thing. So that all happened. Like it was crazy, right? I get home from my mission. There's a little bit of a media blitz. I go on the fireside tour. Firesides are like what LDS people do after church. Somebody comes and talks about
3 hours isn't enough, Troy.
Yeah.
No.
You got to go 2 hours out. You know that?
I know they change it. Conference changed it.
Yeah.
My watch conference this year too.
That's great, man. It's inspiring. You're ready.
I'm ready, man.
Let's do this.
The only thing is I got in trouble for saying this. This has got to be the greatest interview and most, but also the funnest, just so you know. But I was teasing with my mother-in-law, who is LDS. And I told her I can't actually go to a church because I'm one of the 3 Nephites and you guys would actually know my age. I thought it was hilarious. Oh my gosh. It did not go over well.
Oh my gosh.
President Simmons in 1966 talked about one of the 3 Nephites, and I was watching one of the old conferences, and he says, if they ever joined a church, you would know their chronological history. And I go, that's why I can't.
That's
but
awesome.
I do my family home evening. I do my popping ape.
F-H-E.
F-H-E, yeah. Family home evening. Yeah. You got to know the acronyms.
Okay. So
fast forward. We're going all over this. It's awesome though.
I just met one of the 3 Nephites. This is a great day.
There's the title of this podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Andrew Chops. Andrew Chops. Andrew Pops. And I'm the three knee types. There we go. Okay, let's keep going. So I do have a ton of questions and you keep.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is the best.
Let me tell you, like this, I think, because, you know, being kidnapped, it's kind of boring. Making movies, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know.
So yeah.
I'm on vacation with my wife. My wife gets a Facebook. This was in 2011. She gets a Facebook request from a Hollywood director. Says, "Hey, can you have your husband call me?" So I'm like, I'm sitting there in like an outlet mall in the middle of some, I don't even remember where we're at. I'm calling him and he's like, "Hey, I went to BYU film school.
Yeah.
And when you were kidnapped, I was fascinated. I followed the story every day. And I thought it would be a great movie for me to do when I got to the point in my career to do it. And right now is that time." And I'm like, okay, crazy. Well, let me talk to my companion and see if that's something we'd want to do. But before I do anything, he's like, okay. So I called Tuttle and we're both like, hey, we've moved on, you know?
Yeah.
I adopted a couple kids. He's got four kids. You know, we're doing all sorts of different things and life's pretty good. You know, we've moved on. That's way behind us. And so we call the guy back and say, "Hey, I think we're good. You know, we don't want you to make a movie. You know, we're not one of the three Nephites. We're not that righteous. We don't deserve to have movies.
I wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, no, of course not." So, but he won't let it down. He won't let it go. He's like, "No, we got to do this."
He's dogged on.
Yeah, he's saying, so he says, "Look, I'll fly out to Boise, and I'll fly Tuttle out to Boise, and we'll just spend a weekend together." He's talking about it. Okay. So he comes out, he pulls out the recorder. He's like, "Tell me every detail of the story." I said, okay. And it's interesting how Tuttle and I like literally remembered everything to the T when we were sitting there kind of spitballing this.
Had you
story.
Already written a book about it?
No.
Or anything?
No.
This was just
no,
a...
We did,
this
I,
and this just off the
top of my head. Like I wrote my journal. I wrote like a 3-page in my journal because, you know, you only get like 30 minutes a day to write in your journal when you're a missionary. So you got it, you know, three pages. That's a lot.
Pretty good.
That's a lot. A lot going on.
Is that good?
Yeah.
So
making a movie is less battering than getting kidnapped.
Yeah. So he convinces us that, okay, we should do it. So we sign an agreement that, okay, he can have the rights to the story and we think nothing of it. And he gets hired by the church to run the Mormon messages. Great, great job. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, it's never going to happen. MoveOn.org. I don't care. And he gets incredibly ill and has to have major heart surgery. Mm. So he has to quit his day job. As he's recovering from heart surgery, he writes the script, takes it in to the one of the producers.
Come on.
And immediately gets the thing funded. First time.
Well, which doesn't happen.
Doesn't
go to any film festivals or anything like that. Immediately gets funded, gets made in under a year, and then gets released in October of 2013.
I have to ask this before asking it. Will you come back? Because I have a ton more questions and I know it's going to take longer than an hour.
Yeah, no, we'll come back. I'm just
he
the next
literally
next
has to be my favorite. Props is my favorite.
Oh, you're my,
right now.
You're one of the three Nephites. You're one of my three favorite Nephites.
So I'm going to transition though, because you mentioned adoption. You mentioned.
Oh, wait. Can we ask one more question?
Well, of course you can. Yeah.
So you're site.
You're a stake president, but I'm a Nephite.
There's people that are trying to figure out what the heck is going on.
Hey, all I can tell you is he swears a lot less on this podcast when we're talking about Heavenly Father.
I do. Yeah.
So maybe we should make that part of every podcast.
I like that.
Here's my question.
Proud of you.
You signed this contract. Mm-hmm. How did you do? I mean, because this is your story. Did you know how to negotiate
question.
It?
Yeah.
Oh, did you get taken advantage of?
No.
Through the process? Did you get paid for your story? How does that work? I've never been with anyone that they made a movie about him.
I didn't know these things either. I had local counsel look at the contract.
So you had someone look at it.
Yeah. I mean, just to make sure that there wasn't anything there that I was going to regret later other than just that story.
Right.
You know, like if I wanted to write a book about something else, you know, I can. Right.
Right.
So we looked at all that. We weren't doing it for the money. Right. If you do independent movies,
money's not
one out of 100 make money.
Right.
So we weren't doing it for that. I think, you know, we sold our life rights to the story. I think we got $5,000 in consideration. So I can tell you that my personal travel bill to kind of promote the movie was way beyond. But you know, it was a really cool. I was also running my business. I took almost a year off my business to fly around the country
and promote
this guy's
going international to talk about this movie. I love it was crazy.
So you're running. Did you think we were going here today when you said, "So tell me, where did you went on your mission?"
Yeah, that's what I thought, man. By the way, Tommy does this to me all the time. He always brings in these amazing people, but I have no, he does send out the write-ups. I just don't read them.
Hey.
And so I'm like, I'm literally walking with McLovin there in front of you. And I'm like, who are we interviewing again? And he goes, it's Andrew Probst. And I'm like, okay, but what did he do? I'm fascinated.
I know. So let's keep going.
I want to keep going because I transition into you were running your business, just so you know, Inspire Excellence and the podcast is Inspire Excellence. I do want to bring a serious tone. I honestly believe that the experience you went through, you got paid more than $5,000.
For sure.
I believe that because I believe that there are intangibles. I believe the intangible of what you got, the monetary might be $5,000, but you learned grit. You learned discipline. You faced what most people never get to face, and that's their mortality, their reality, and their ability to do better, more, and faster.
Yeah.
And you have.
Yeah. I mean, when you get 5 days to think you're going to die, like five constant, 24-hour periods to think these are the last minutes, seconds of your life, you learn a lot. I mean, it's really clear what's important. What's really important. So, right. I mean, my two takeaways from that, and this hit me 5 seconds in, there's really two things in this life that matter. And it's, your relationships with your fellow human beings and your relationship with God. And what are you doing every day to cultivate those relationships?
Mm. Yeah.
That's it. Nothing else mattered. Like, it's like, man, I hurt my relationship with my mom because I didn't take out the trash when she asked me to, God, people, cultivate the relationship.
It got rid of all that. We were talking about that last week and the week before. And I sincerely believe it got rid of all the things and really brought the top, the purpose. Yeah. Like we don't have a contract on tomorrow.
No.
We don't. We have a lease on today and the payment is due. Mm. And it sounds like to me ever since then, maybe before, I don't know, you've been paying that lease every day. Because I can see you, I've read enough about you in the quick bio and stuff. I mean, you've gone on to create a very successful and a very prolific career setting path for your community and for your family and for your faith. You represent your faith well.
Oh, well, thanks. You don't hear that every day. Not like this guy.
So tell me a little bit what, so you've gone on, you got all these successful businesses. So
yeah.
National property management company. You own Meridian Lanes, so we'll get into in a minute. Boeing, Troy's going to want to talk about that. When you look back now and you have this experience with the movie, what did you learn from that? Mm-hmm. And how have you been able to, because that's a life experience that not very many people have. And I think one of the things you just said is I learned the two most relationships. What about to the business world? How has it changed who you are, as a husband, father, business leader?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a manic entrepreneur and I run pretty fast, and that kind of slowed me down. Kind of, hey, take a breather. It's not all about the next, my drug was the next opportunity or, knocking on the most doors or whatever. And so that kind of helped me stop looking at the scoreboard and to be able to give of myself a little bit more unconditionally because I think I was a pretty conditional guy. Hey, I did one for you. Now it's, my turn sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that went away when I went through that experience.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. That is super insightful.
It ties into him and I have had lots of commiseration talks about we're always ahead of our skis. We're always just our mistress. And I say this sincerely, our mistress is success.
Oh yeah.
Like I just want to have it. But the facing mortality, him and I both faced a heart situation. In facing that mortality, you really go, well, wait a second. There's only so much I can do. You said this the last podcast, be present. You practiced being present. You sent me a text the other day.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah. You have that part for me is just sometimes you're going so hard.
Yeah.
And there's so many things to do. that you can pass 2 or 3 days and not really be present or pause. And at least for me, I'm a big believer in living life with gratitude.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's hard to practice it.
Yeah.
Because we get so lost in our way. Even doing good things sometimes that we don't take time to pause and reflect. Have you found ways to do that?
Yeah, I read a great book that really helped me with that, which was Sean Acor's The Happiness Advantage. And it talks about, hey, these are the 5 things that you do every day, you're going to be happy. And when I practice those 5 things, I'm happy. And the world just keeps giving me more and more. And I feel like I don't deserve it. When I get out of that practice, I'm not so happy. I deal with issues. And so I got to the point where now my assistant, Daylene, she's a wonderful lady. She checks on me. She sends me, here's the 5 things you have to do. And then checks on me at the end of the day. Did you do them? You know, so, one of the things is, 3 things I'm grateful for. Mm. 1, random act of kindness, meditate, exercise, right? These are just the things that you do every day. And if you do them, you're going to be happy. You don't hear people being sad when you're doing these things on a daily basis.
I love that you use the word practice, and I love you. So my executive assistant is Miss Sally. She's been with me 10 years and 7 days a week. Everybody asks, how do I do it? I don't do it by myself. And it's a practiced craft towards perfection.
Yeah.
But don't you think that is, so for a lot of people that are listening, and we get asked a lot of time, how do you do it? What do you do? And I think what you just taught us is there is a process. It's thoughtful, right? Mm-hmm. It's thoughtful on how, and it's different for everyone probably a little bit than the 3 of us, even if we all compared notes on how we do it. But if you talk to successful people, they have discipline in their daily practice of life. And it's often the little things, doing them over and over again. It's consistently doing today what you want to become tomorrow, right? It's the art of becoming. And I think if you say, I want to become a good father, well, then you practice every day the things that will make you a good father. I want to become a successful business person. Yeah. So that art of becoming, I think there's a lot to learn from what you just said, which is whatever your 5 things are, 3 things are, and you're not going to be perfect, but what are the processes you have in place to help you stay committed to becoming what you're going to become? That's powerful. That's some good stuff right there, buddy.
And the gratitude is the best. I mean, you know, it's something that it's a constant practice, but when you practice it, you can just see yourself and then everybody around you gets excited. Yeah. They feel it, you know, because there's not a lot of gratitude going on out there.
No, there's not.
You have to have that cliché, but the attitude of gratitude. And in the worst moments, you heard me talk about this morning. I've heard him and watched him live this. It's seeing life that is not failure, but in between success cycles. Yeah. I was saying that this morning. It's seeing life as not falling down, but failing up. And it's just changing the paradigm shift. And then it's also, if we're all born to stand out, why are we trying to fit in? You're born to stand out. You're standing out. Not through your suit, which is great. Not through
the suit is fantastic.
The suit is fantastic. Hey,
anybody that just listens to the podcast, you've got to go. You got to go to whatever social media McLovin's going to put all this.
McLovin,
out
you got to put it out
this,
there.
This is the best suit in the history of the podcast.
Dude, I thought you had a good suit. No, man, come on. Oh, if I had your,
what's suit, your liner? I got to see your liner.
Oh yeah,
I got. Oh come on, the liner's great.
Graffiti in there. I don't know if you
podcast. Who did your suit?
Guy named Greg Smith. Smith Bespoke. He does this. He does the suits, but yeah, it's you know, it's my thing, you know.
But you're living. I love the suit. He's living out loud.
Yeah,
he's living out loud through an attitude of gratitude, and he's not. You're not ashamed to stand out. You're not ashamed to be loud.
I'm dying to ask you. I got a lot of things to ask this guy.
That's why I said.
You got to promise. Come back.
Hey, you got
to
come back.
The 3 Nephites aren't going to come to you if you're wearing a polo. And like khakis, you know what I'm saying?
I agree.
Hey, let me ask you this, because clearly it's our first time spending time together today. But tell me how important branding is for your business. You obviously, when I saw you walk into them, like
he's branded.
There's a dude that understands branding and understands what it means to his business.
Yeah.
Teach us about that in your businesses.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, we're a service business. I don't think the brand is important as the service, right? Mm-hmm. So the service should be our brand. You know, in property management, it's a tough business. It's a high friction.
But you branded yourself.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So leader. Mm-hmm. So tell me about how important branding of you as the leader is to creating the culture of service. Maybe I asked the question wrong.
No, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't maybe have as much energy as Troy, but I try to bring a lot of energy to work and what I do. And that might come through my clothes or my presence. And I want that to filter down to the people that are there. They see me. And we want to build a culture of removing obstacles, you know, bottom up. If you look at, we have an upside down triangle, and you know, you have a corporate head. There's two different ways to do it. The corporate puts obstacles in place or they remove obstacles. Yeah. And my job as, you know, CEO of the company is to figure out ways to take the burden off the people that are doing their job on a regular basis. And when I do that, they get pretty excited about following whatever I'm doing.
Well, you're the chief enabler officer. You're not the chief executive. You enable
success.
And
what I love
success.
About what you just said, and so for anyone listening, you put thought and practice mm-hmm. into becoming the brand that will make your company thrive. And it's not always easy, right? What you do, you talked about bringing energy. You talked about removing obstacles. You talked about having a bottom up. People feel included. They feel part of a company. They right. want to go serve. And in a service industry, I mean, that's critical.
Hard. Yeah.
And that's critical. A little example for us here. We spend a lot of time building buildings. We got a great construction department. We've got great architects. We've got guys that go and lease buildings. We've got a good team. But the most important team members here for the longevity of our company is our property managers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those are the guys that once the ink's dry and we stick someone in a building as our long-term partner,
right.
Let me tell you, they see right through it if they don't feel like that you're a partner. And right. that goes down to toilet paper and mm-hmm. in the bathrooms and cleanliness and my light bulb's been out. And so I spend a lot of time, one of those guys happens to be my brother-in-law. He's been with me for 15 years. But man, I tell him all the time, couldn't do it without you. Oh, now he laughs mm-hmm. sometimes. Oh yeah, whatever. You just replace me. But it's not true.
Oh, yeah.
We were down at a building that we used to own just yesterday. And one of the CEOs of a big company says, man, we miss you guys. We miss your guys. So I came back, I called him on the phone. I said, hey, I want to let you know, I was in a meeting today that they specifically brought up you and the service that you provided. So for guys like that and teams like that, they've got to understand what the vision is. They understand the plan and the clarity of purpose. But what you are and how you brand yourself and how you take care of them and how you build that corporate culture is just critical. And sometimes you see business leaders and businesses where they don't get that. And I knew right. when you walked in, I thought, there's a dude that understands branding.
I'm going to compliment him even more. So it goes back to permission-based values and permission. So you give permission to grind. When you write values on the wall, they're two-dimensional. You give permission to stand out, to be energetic, to be positive, to find resolution. Even in talking about, quite honestly, a traumatic experience in with levity
yeah.
and with-
And what did I get out of it?
And what did I get out of it?
What was the positive?
That's permission-based values that you're giving. You at BVA, I watch everyone in your team. You give permission to grind. You give permission to be gracious. You give permission to listen. You give permission to learn. You give permission to lead without ego, exiting God out. That's permission-based values. You walked in and gave permission. You gave permission to us. Have fun, be honest, be authentic, and bring levity. That is the best branding, yeah. in my opinion, you can do. Permission-based branding.
Yeah, and the other thing that, you know, just kind of go back to a couple of, I missed a podcast. I got stuck in.
Where were you, by the way?
I got stuck in Dallas. I went to the national championship
game. Let's not say stuck, just so you know.
I got stuck in the airport coming back from the national championship game in New Orleans. But one of my dear friends, Kent Orm,
yeah.
Idaho Central Credit Union.
Oh, phenomenal. Yeah.
That guy oozes authenticity. Mm-hmm. I mean, he walks into a room, any meeting. I've watched him interact with his employees, and he's just so dang authentic. He's found a way. And you look at like Kent, he comes from an IT background, right? Mm-hmm. You don't think of an IT nerd right, as a CEO, right? Yeah, right so he's right. had to learn how to take strengths that he had for leadership, which are clearly there, right? Some of it is just DNA. But then he has spent his career through experience and through trying to drive a mission and a vision saying, hey, I'm going to build myself into the person that can lead this organization through authenticity.
Yeah.
And I wish that some people that, because I get asked all the time, how are you doing it? What are you doing? And I'm like, it's hard work. You know, you're looking, you look at Kent, you say, yeah. Kent, if you look at who you were when you were in an IT department at ICCU, and now you're the CEO driving the most successful financial institution in the state of Idaho right now, what made that happen? He'll say it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
But underneath it, it's authentic.
And this is what I think with you, right? Underneath it, there is an authentic drive and you are who you are. But then you're changing, you're building yourself. You're trying to say, hey, what's working and how do I build a brand and create a culture? I just think that's an important point for people listening that it's not easy work, but it's very worthwhile. I think we heard a line in one of our podcasts, most important part of money is what's the line?
It's the best part of money.
The best part of money
the
is
best part
back.
Of money is given back. And so we were interviewing a gentleman named Scott Lamb, who's this international trainer and speaker in persuasive ways of selling, blah, blah, blah. All like he just knocks it out of the park. But he said, really, because we were talking about charity, and he goes, it's the best part of money. I mean, money can buy you things, or the best part of money is you can give it back.
Give it back and see it in action.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the bowling alley, because I think is a way you're giving back.
Yeah. I mean, that was the initial, and it was a crazy, crazy story. Awesome. I mean, you know, I get myself into crazy things. I don't know. Bowling was one of those things, but crazy story how that even plopped on my lap. But it is. I mean, we got to bring back the bowl-a-thon, you know, one penny for the pen or whatever. I mean, that's what we need to do. But it is a great, it's a community fixture. As you know, when they took down 20th Century
Yes.
Games, there was people with pitchforks and
yes.
and signs like don't tear this thing down. And it's I had no idea what I was getting into, you know, when I bought the bowling alley. The good news is I'm a horrible bowler. I haven't bowled much since I bought it, but I got a great general manager. He runs it. And, you know, it's just
tell us about your sister.
And yeah, she's the third. I'm one of five. So she's the third. But you know, she was born with complications, obviously.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
She's great. She's lived here in Idaho basically her whole life. She lived up in Post Falls for a little bit. But she's a big bowler, you know, her and her group, they go and they bowl and they can't miss it. Like, right.
No.
If there's a something else, it's bad. It's bad news.
Yeah, so my sister, special needs, and I was sharing Meridian Bowling. That's where she goes because 20th Century got shut down. And you want to talk about having your why versus your how. Sometimes the why is the cost. You don't need to know the how right away. You need to know the why first. So those in business know your why. And I'd also say to compliment on what you're saying, it is hard work, but it's a combination of hard work with the paradigm shift of a mental mindset. You can have a mental mindset that says this was tragic that happened to me, or you can say, I got hit with a baseball bat. And by the way, hurts to put your hand over your head when he hits you with a baseball bat. And being able to, because we're all going to fall, it's how fast we get up. And then the why, to your point, when you buy something, when you purchase something, the best part of money is sometimes it does make you a profit, but when you're doing it with authenticity and when you're doing it with drive and passion and guidance, man, you change lives. Without you, not even knowing it was you, without you, my sister would not be happy. I'll just tell you that. And that is impactful. I'm going to compliment both you guys. The greatest definition of a brand is knowing that people are talking about you positively when you're not around. We had a week that went by, 2 weeks that went by that you weren't here. Everyone here talked about you. That's a positive impact on the brand. That's when you know you have a brand. And they're talking about you positively when you're not around. You have a brand because you will leave and I will be talking about you.
Yeah.
That's an impact. That's the definition of a successful brand.
Tell us a little bit about how people can follow you or know your companies that may be out there and learn more about what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, we got a blog. We don't have a cool podcast. We need to get one, I guess.
Maybe you guys can share. Yeah. The Three Nephites. We'll
but yeah,
Three Nephites podcast.
I can't wait to call your mother-in-law.
No, seriously. I will get in trouble. Yeah. Seriously.
We would be struck down.
So we would. Probably call it's not money else. At all to her.
No.
I thought it was hilarious.
She doesn't listen to the podcast?
It's impressive.
No.
You know about the Three Nephites.
Would she rather have you swearing or talking about Three Nephites?
That's a good question. I don't. You would have to answer that.
That's a value proposition.
Just so you know, everyone else may think this is an odd conversation. Multiplepreneurs like ourselves can keep up with everything. Everything. So that's why it's a normal conversation for us.
Yeah, the ADD, man.
Yeah, just
can't
in.
Miss anything.
No.
Boom, boom, boom. Just coming at you.
So we're back to Three Nephites. Website,
yeah. Homeriver.com.
Homeriver.com.
Homeriver.com. MeridianLanesBowling.com. I'm just kidding.
Don't, Meridian Lanes.
No, don't reach me there. Just go bowling. You know, bowling is cool because you can take a grandma. great grandma, a mom, and a daughter.
You know, no, we're promoting the heck out of this. Meridian Lanes.
They all go have fun together. Yeah, I'm just cool. And you're not sitting there watching a screen. You can have a conversation.
And then Serotop Approach is on Netflix?
You can stream it for free 99 on Amazon. It's Amazon. On Amazon Prime.
I will do it.
Amazon Prime, yep. Serotop Approach.
Right.
Your suit maker?
Yeah. Greg Smith.
Greg Smith. I'm telling you.
Dude, wrap this up because I got way too many questions and I will take it on for 2 hours.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much for being here.
Boy, that was fast.
We really, really appreciate it. And like Troy said, you got to promise to come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You close us out. I don't do it well.
Hey, everybody, thank you very much. Wonderful, wonderful, amazing interview. That is Inspire Excellence. If you want to stay around for the after hours conversations, please do.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.
Okay, now we're just going to talk.
Okay.
So, because I got all kinds of questions. First of all, I've never asked this on the podcast. I've only asked one other person, and that's him. How do we do business together?
What do we want to do?
What can I do to help you? And what do you need? Who do you need to meet, connect, or what do you want to do? I've only asked one other person in my entire life, and I swear to you, to Heavenly Father above, that was him. Who do you need to meet, connect with, and how do we do business together? Like, I'm that fascinated with you.
Oh, wow. Well,
he's amazing.
We do a lot of multifamily, and we probably have 5 or 6 projects going up right now, you know, just multifamily property, you know,
it's taking them from dirt to build on.
So basically what I do is I'll find an opportunity, piece of land, whatever. And then okay. we manage for 6,000 investors.
Okay.
Right? We have 15,000 doors. There's 6,000 investors. Cause a lot of our investors are mom and pops, right? They own 1 or 2 single family homes here in Mississippi or
right.
wherever. Most of them live in California. And what I'll do is I'll find an opportunity of maybe it's an infill or whatever. And then help them, you know, introduce them to a builder. We use 3 or 4 different builders and then they, you know, come in with their money and then I'll figure out a way to partner or put it together so we can manage more.
So you're a bird dog broker kind of situation?
Kind of.
with the end game being that you're a property manager.
We're managing, yes. Right? But
you're really a developer.
Right. Right.
That's what I think. I think you're more of a developer.
You're really a developer that also probably manages.
Quasi-developer. I don't do entitlements. I have guys that do that. I find the deals, put the investors together with the people that can, you know, make dirt into something awesome. And look, I think it's exciting because all the people that we've helped, the amount, I mean, we started, our first project was Brassy Cove in Nampa, 264 fourplex units. We started that project with Doug McMasters and Dave Turner. We started July of 2010. Mm. They bought 6 fourplexes, a clubhouse, a pool, and 60 fourplex lots for $900,000. Wow. And they built it out, and we sold each one of those fourplexes for $265,000. One sold last week for $580,000. Those people love me.
That's why we're going to get ready, me and you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
arbitrage the heck out of this market when it crashes.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Because I looked at that project.
Yeah, right, right.
The craziest thing about the last recession, and it was deep and ugly and everything else, but I remember driving that. I remember driving those projects. I remember driving so many of them here in town and thinking, and we actually hired national experts to say, how long is it going to be till we're out of this thing?
Right. Yeah.
And the experts were saying, don't touch this. There, I remember the one guy came up and said,
"Really?
There was a subdivision in Middleton that was completely in, like curb gutter, sidewalks, utilities, everything ready to go. You could buy it for $3,000 a lot.
Come on,
over 100 lot ready." And the guy said, "Don't touch that. It will be 10, 12, 14, 15 years before it comes back."
Right.
So I guess the lesson to be learned from what you just told us is, you know, it's pretty hot right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy hot.
It's crazy hot. Now,
here's the problem.
Like, do you see an end in mind? Do you see a horizon on the reset of the market?
I want to say yes, but here's the problem. There is so much dry powder on the sidelines, unlike anything we've ever seen before.
That's true.
That the second it starts to dip, all that money is going to go in. And that's true. I don't know.
And the other thing is the fundamental of the subprime thing is not there this
time. No.
So last time it was absolutely a perfect storm of so many things all at one time. So I agree it won't, but yeah, I hope you're right. Either way, what I talk to you about is like
that's
two scenarios, right?
Yep.
Scenario one is not going to slow down and let's go. Scenario two is when it does slow down, let's go. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen a very long recovery. And typically when you have a long recovery, it's kind of a level off and a short decline, right? So I don't see it, especially on the multifamily, single family rental side.
Right.
I don't see it slowing down.
So what about putting a fund together? Yeah. Do you have a fund right now?
Syndication fund.
Yeah. You have a syndication fund?
Opportunity zone fund.
Okay. So your opportunity zoned fund.
Yeah. Gladys Gardens is the fund that I have. Which is named after Elvis's mom.
Oh, written. Get out of here.
Because our first project was right across the street from Graceland in Memphis.
What's the acquisition criteria for the fund, and is the fund capped?
No. And we, it's like, it's pretty easy. Raising the money is the easy part. Finding the deal is the hard part. So we put this fund together to buy this first project.
We need to do business.
I was going to say, that's why I'm asking. I never ask anybody, how do you do business? Cause I'm going to get to it, buddy. Okay, here's the deal.
Yeah.
We'll put a fund together.
Tommy's right. I appreciate that. If you don't think property management's important, hire a bad property manager.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then you'll find out real quick.
And then you'll know.
Yeah.
I think this is the fund.
Finding deals, doing deals, that's all great. But if you don't have solid management in place with somebody that's going to crack down on the people, you lose.
It's the hardest part, but it's the best part of the business. Mm-hmm. And it's also the thing that brings stability over a long term. Yep. And that's what people don't understand. It's what we're really creating here. And that's why, Ryan Cleverly, my right-hand guy, he's kind of our unsung hero here because he quietly just goes and gets it done. He's the finance guy, and he's the guy that runs our property management stuff.
Yeah.
No fanfare, no everything else, but he's building this property management empire underneath him, which is just it's the hard work.
Yeah.
But it's the recurring revenue.
Recurring revenue.
And it MRR, is the and it is the relationship. Recurring revenue. Yep. It is the connection to people. That's why I'm just so proud when that guy said that. I thought, you're right. That is true. And it's what matters. Anyway.
And it's
put a fund. He was just talking to me about this. And you get a fund put together for the arbitrage, but you also participate in the upside.
Yeah. The syndication funds.
We got to do something together.
We can put something like that together. And what's nice is that, we're in.
How much do you travel?
Quite a bit. But we're in a lot of different states. So if Boise feels like it's tight, we can go, we can look somewhere else.
I'm going to switch gears. Then we got to go. What's your sister's diagnosis? Do you know?
Well, she's just, mentally.
That's my sister. Yeah. There's no real development delay. The old diagnosis, mental retardation.
Yeah, we don't say that.
Yeah, we don't say that anymore. Right. But that's the clinical diagnosis.
Yeah,
Troy says about anything.
Yeah, I say it all, man. It's just legally incorrect. But and I am one of the three nearby, so I get permission to do it. I'm doing business with him, Tommy.
She's a 53-year-old.
This was awesome.
Yeah, this is
fun,
dude.
We need a picture.